This is On Location. I'm Joe Mamlin. Today's episode comes to you on location from Alaska, Illinois, California, South Carolina, and Washington, D.C. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Tim Leitner and me. You can find the podcast and subscribe on your favorite podcast app, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and many more. Today's show is co-hosted by Tim Leitner and Pat O'Donnell, where they welcome guests Corey Flores from ADP and Robin Large from the Federal Office of Child Support Services. They discuss the critical role that payroll providers and employers play in the child support program. They also talk about the challenge of working with independent contractors and handling income withholding orders with non-traditional employees. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to NCA On Location, where today's episode is the second in a series focused on engaging with employers from all over the country that are involved and invested in child support mandates. My name is Tim Leitner, and I'm with CGI Technologies and Solutions Incorporated in Anchorage, Alaska, and joining me today is my co-host and colleague, Pat O'Donnell. Pat?
Well, hi, everyone. As Tim mentioned, I'm Pat O'Donnell. I'm with Young Williams, and I'm based in Chicago, Illinois. In our first podcast in this series, we talked about the importance of employers in the child support program. So just as a bit of a recap, the Federal Office of Child Support Services provides oversight of the National Child Support Program that touches the lives of approximately 13.2 million children nationwide. When you think about it, that's one in five children in our country. Next to the custodial parents' earnings, child support is the second largest income source for poor families receiving child support. During our last podcast, we talked about an overview of employers' roles and responsibilities, including new hire reporting, income withholding orders, medical support notices, remitting payments, and verification of employment. So back with us today to help us understand a little more about employers' roles and whose job is it are Corey Flores with ADP and Robin Large with the Federal Office of Child Support Services, Division of Federal Systems. Would each of you introduce yourselves and tell us a little about who you are and what you do? Corey, let's start with you.
Great. Thanks so much. I'm Corey Flores, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for ADP, supporting our wage garnishment and new hire businesses. I've been with ADP for over 28 years, and really my role with ADP is to partner with our state and government agencies on behalf of the clients we represent. I do want to mention I'm also the current chair of Payroll.org, or PAYO, formerly known as the American Payroll Association's Government Relations Task Force for Child Support and Other Garnishments. And our committee is focused on the payroll professional's perspective in handling wage garnishments that employers receive today. And I'm also the NCA co-chair of the membership committee. So thank you for having me.
Robin?
Thank you. My name is Robin Large, and I'm with the Federal Office of Child Support Services. And I am a child support program specialist, and I currently am the federal lead over the employer services, or one of the federal leads over the employer services team. So we focus a lot on what we're going to be talking about today with the outreach to the employer community who are our vital partners. Over 75%, or about 72% actually in 2022, of the collections for child support were collected by employers. So they are a very, very important stakeholder. So we're excited to be a part of this. And the committee that Corey just mentioned, the PAYO Government Relations Fair Task Force, our team is also part of that because we'd like to hear from the employer community. And that is a really good group that gives representation of issues and that arise in the employer community with relation to child support. So I'm happy to be here today.
Great. Thank you, Robin. We're glad you're here too. So well, for our listeners, we thought we would take this discussion to the next step and try to unravel and provide clarity for those independent contractors working for you that have a child support obligation. Corey and Robin, you've mentioned that this can be unclear to an employer when they receive an income withholding order for an independent contractor that they are paying. Can you tell us a little bit more about this and provide some general awareness? And maybe do you have any stats that might give us some insight for independent contractors?
So I guess I'll start and Robin jump in. I think the one thing that I would share about the independent contractor from an employer's perspective is when the income withholding order is received, the employer is going to initially, right, their normal process is to go into their payroll system to see if that person listed on the order is in their payroll system. And for independent contractors, for most employers, that information is not stored in the payroll system. That's actually stored in a completely separate system that the payroll area may or may not have access to. So the employer gets the income withholding order. They first have to determine, you know, do they have this person listed within their system? And if they don't find it in payroll, there's a process that they may have to go through in order to see if that person listed on the order is in the accounts payable or wherever they house their independent contractor information. So it's not a matter of they get the order and they process as they normally do. There's an outside step that they have to already have in place just to identify the person. And then I do want to share that one of our PAYO committee members said when they get the income withholding orders in and they have a process to send it to this completely other team if they can't find the person listed on the order, they send it to this other team that handles all their independent contract information and payments. And 100% of the time, Tim, they have to call on those income withholding orders that they receive when it is for an independent contractor, because the information may not apply or may not be something that they can just pick up the order and implement because the payment frequency is not going to be the same. They may be paying the independent contractor on a per contract basis or, you know, as a separate kind of agreement in how often they pay. So it's not just a matter of they get the order, they can implement just like they do with their normal employees. 100% of the time, this employer said, we have to call to find out what's the maximum withholding limits, how often am I supposed to send in the payments, things like that. And so it is a completely separate process flow that an employer has to ensure that they have one already established and that they're following every single time they get an order where they can't potentially locate the person listed.
So I would imagine there's some frustration with that as well.
Absolutely. It's a lot of additional steps. And keep in mind, the payroll professional is trying to do all their other tasks, which is get the other income withholding orders processed, get their payroll completed, you know, on their payroll frequency. And so it's just additional steps and it's not easy and it's pretty manual and they just have to really be aware. And I would say, and I think as we go through some of these topics today, I think you're going to hear kind of a theme from me on education. It's the awareness and the education I think is key to make sure that the employer community understands what the requirement is and what they need to do in order to meet that requirement.
Yeah, and that everybody's pretty much in the same boat having to do that. It's not just one company or one segment that's called out to do this. It's everybody's having to do it.
Yes, exactly.
So, Robin, for independent contractors, what are the federal and state laws around reporting to the child support program? And are there timeframes that differ from state to state? And is there an option through the federal OCSS portal?
So for independent contractors, it's really a state-focused or state-run option. New hire reporting for independent contractors is required in 19 states. So 19 states have passed legislation saying, you know, you must report your independent contractors. The other states don't have that requirement. So from the beginning, you know, in order to report, the employers have to be aware of the 19 states that have the legislation. So there are no federal requirements as far as reporting independent contractors. It falls to the state and their new hire reporting practices. Like Corey said, you know, it is difficult because we hear when we speak at conferences and at PAO, you know, that there are in some instances, you know, for large companies, the human resource aspect where contractors are hired is totally different from the payroll and they don't speak, they don't have a connection, so they may not even know. And, you know, as employers become aware, then they realize that, you know, that there has to be some communication between the two because the payroll people say, well, I don't even know if they've hired an independent contractor. We're not aware of it to even report it for new hires. So it is a lot of education and it does fall on the employers, especially if they are in a state that requires the reporting. So your question, Tim, if there's an option to report through the federal OCSS portal. So the federal OCSS portal offers a variety of applications for employers. And we work on it continuously to improve it, to try to make communication between employers and child support agencies, you know, more efficient, more effective and easier. From the new hire perspective, since the employers have to report new hires to a particular state, there is not an option to actually do the reporting through the portal. What there is an option through the portal is if an employer has employees in multiple states and wants to report their new hires to one particular state that they have employees in, then they would need to register on the OCSS portal to be a multi-state employer reporter. And the reason why this is so important, because if a large company has employees in all of the states and they have not registered as a multi-state employer, then each individual state is going to be looking for those new hires. If they register as a multi-state employer and they have employees in all states and choose to report to Virginia, then that information is shared through our portal to the states to say the new hire reporting for ABC company goes to Virginia. Virginia gets it and then they upload it and it's shared with all states. The important piece of that is if the employers don't register, the states don't know that, and they could be held in non-compliance for not reporting to that particular state. So that's an important piece. And that is, again, available on the OCSS portal.
And Robin, if I can put you on the spot, would you happen to have that portal URL that we could share with our listeners?
I do. The portal is HTTPS and then /OCSP.ACF.HHS.gov and then /CSP, child support portal, CSP, and then the /. And you actually can register, right? We've recently improved our registration process, so everything is online. So once they go to that portal, there is a link. If they're not already registered for the portal, then they can just register right from that link.
Great. Thank you.
So, Corey, I'd like to direct the next question to you. If an employer receives an income withholding order, you mentioned that it's oftentimes a manual research project to determine if the person is an independent contractor. Are there any types of designations on the income withholding order to help the employer identify that at the outset? And then where does the order and amount come from? And are they in a standard withholding frequency or is it more situational?
Great question, Pat. In fact, I love this question. So I think I'll answer it kind of in reverse order of what you asked. So is there any kind of standard withholding frequency? There isn't. So it's going to vary based on the individual contract with that independent contractor. And so that's the first challenge, right? How often, if even if the income withholding order, you know, it comes in and it has an amount, but it's not going to necessarily be applicable to that independent contractor's contract that's established with that employer that is paying them. So that's the first challenge. And I can tell you, most employers were very familiar with the income withholding order coming in. And we have an established process that says, I get the order and I want to timely go into the system and set it up. But when it is an independent contractor, there is nothing on the order that designates that it is for an independent contractor. So the employer is going to get it in their normal processing. They're going to try to set it up. And the first kind of indication for them will be they may not find that person listed within the payroll system. And so even if we think about EIWO, so if an employer is on the EIWO process, and like ADP, we have the system-to-system process set up or established. If the EIWO file comes in, it normally will go into the payroll system and try to match with the person listed within that record. It will not find a match if there is no independent contractor, if your independent contractors are not housed within your payroll system. And so again, the first flag is going to be there's unable to locate that person. And so the employer has to use that as the first indicator to say, okay, I can't find this person in payroll. Let me take it to the next step, whatever their established process is, and let me go look into this second system. And then once I find them in that second system, the information on the IWO, you know, to pay weekly may not be applicable. And that's where I mentioned earlier, one of our members said 100% of the time she has to call and find out from the issuing agency how they want that income withholding order set up and how they want the payments withheld. They have to have a conversation about this is what we're typically doing, or this is the contract and how often we're paying. And so multiple steps. And I think we all know when you take a normal process and add those exceptions, that's where opportunities can happen and hiccups and challenges. And then, as we know, the payment to an independent contractor is not protected under the Consumer Credit Protection Act maximum limitations. And so in some states, you could be advised to take 100% of the payment. In some states, it could be a lower amount. Some states say, even for independent contractors, we've made the decision or we follow the CCPA maximum limitations. So like Robin said, the responsibility to comply with the order is on the employer. It's just not a, let me pick up the order and just run with it like we do for normal W-2 employees. There are steps and exceptions that the employer has to have a really solid process down to ensure there's no missteps, for lack of a better word. And so, again, whenever you put in those additional exceptions, there's the opportunity for errors or delays, and that's never what we want. Ideally, employers would like to be able to, you know, get that income withholding order, whether it's EIWO or via paper. And even if it's for an independent contractor, if there's a way that it could identify that, especially for the states that Robin mentioned have passed legislation requiring employers to report the independent contractors along with the new hires, especially in those states, if there's a match and an income withholding order is issued because of that match, because the state has passed independent contract reporting and the employer has complied, we would really like to be able to see some sort of indication that tells the employer right off the bat or that payroll professional, this was a result as the employer reporting the independent contractor. And then that payroll professional can get that order over quickly to the area that needs to truly process it.
So if I could just also respond to what Corey was saying, Corey and I are both members of the National Council of Child Support Directors Employer Collaboration Committee. That's a mouthful. So we both are active participants. That committee has many 4D child support directors and child support line workers and a very good representation of the employer community. And we often look at items that are challenges, you know, for employers and for child support agencies and independent contractors. Has been one of the hot tickets that we've been discussing for a good bit of time. And one of the things that the OMB approved income withholding for support order form was recently reauthorized. So it has gone through the process and it expires in 2026. But when we were going through that process, the committee talked about, you know, should we look at revising the income withholding order form, the IWO, to include an independent contractor designation so that just for what Corey's talking about. So when the employers get it, they know right off the bat that it is an independent contractor. And we did get a few comments to this aspect on the form when it was going through reauthorization. So it is something that the committee is looking at and talking about, but there are some inherent issues that would have to be overcome. So like Corey was saying, the states that have the requirement for employers to report, so the employers have to report the new hires to those states. The states take that in, but their state system has no way to generate something to say, okay, this is an independent contractor when they do the reporting to the National Directory of New Hires or when they issue the income withholding order. So there are some steps in order to add an indicator. There's other things that have to happen first. The state has to be able to process it. The National Directory of New Hires has to be able to take it and provide the information. So, you know, it's a relatively easy step to put an indicator on a form, but the more important piece is what can child support agencies do with that indicator and how can that indicator, you know, be pulled into the National Directory of New Hires so that when child support agencies get a hit that person is working for ADP, for example, that they know what to do with it, that they can, that their system can take it. So it is something that we are looking at. And there was even a suggestion for an off-cycle revision to the income withholding order form. But I think that there are some steps that have to happen beforehand. But it is really helpful to hear, you know, as again, this has become a very hot topic. And the more educated we are on the challenges that it presents to the employer community, the more opportunities we have to look at, you know, what are some potential solutions? And also the other piece of it, you know, we have a large number of orders that are processed electronically through the EIWO process, and that would require a code change. So that would be a code change to all child support agencies and a code change to those employers that are system to system like ADP and, you know, some of the others. So there's a few factors that have to be really carefully looked at in order to accomplish this, but it's definitely on the agenda.
Well, thanks for that, both Corey and Robin. You're right, on its face, it seems simple to add a checkbox to a form and make the process easier, but in point of fact, that's the tip of the iceberg, and all the stakeholders involved will have to engage together and separately to consider business process changes in each of their respective systems and also their workflows. So I'm sure the employer community will welcome any and all opportunities to increase efficiency and accuracy in this process because it's very time consuming and likely prone to error. So I'm going to segue into a different topic. So Robin, what do you do if you get a national medical support notice for an independent contractor? How does that process work?
Yeah, so one of the differences with an independent contractor from an employer perspective, if they hire an independent contractor, they do not have to withhold taxes, employment and labor laws, like, for example, the CCPA, the Consumer Credit Protection Act. They don't apply for independent contractors because they are not designated as employees. So when a national medical support notice comes in, that is not applicable to independent contractors because they do not offer, you know, that kind of benefit. They don't have taxes. They don't have those kind of relationships with their independent contractors like they do with an employee. So the employer would not have to honor nor enroll the independent contractor and the children in a national medical support notice. They would just need to reply to the child support agency that the person is an independent contractor. You know, the child support agency then could pursue other avenues to establish medical insurance coverage.
Okay. And then is it the same process for verification of employment?
Well, that is a little bit different. So the committee that I talked about before, the NCCSD Employer Collaboration Committee, a couple of years ago, we worked very hard on establishing a standard response to the verification of employment And that is actually posted on the OCSE website as well. So the verification of employment form itself that is issued by the child support agencies. And there is not a standard form. There's not a federally approved OMB form. So every child support agency has their own version of a verification of employment form. However, all states have agreed to accept the standard response to the verification of employment form from employers. And we have many employers that are very large employers that are actually have used it. They have programmed it into their system. And without fail, the child support agencies respond to the standard form, even though their unique form may ask for different fields. And we've recently heard from a very large employer that even though states ask for additional information when they respond with the standard form, they're not asked, you know, there's no follow-up. They're not asked for additional. But to your point, Pat, on the standard response to the verification of employment, and it's now called employment/income, and this form has been designed so that it, you know, that for employers and payers can provide the requested information for employees, workers, and independent contractors. And there's actually a section that asks, you know, is this an employee or is this an independent contractor to get the specific information they need. So the state law does apply to responding to verifications of employment. They just need to be, you know, very clear that that is an independent contractor. Because again, if a organization responds to the VOE and it says that they are an independent contractor, that should alert the state to know not to issue a national medical support notice because, you know, they don't have to. So the form is very comprehensive. And again, it's one of the things that we try to promote often in Corey as well, that, you know, to let employers know that this standard response is out there and it is applicable to independent contractors.
Thank you.
Well, Corey, let me ask you another question that might be one on your hot topics list. What should an employer do if their independent contractor is due to receive a lump sum payment, such as a bonus?
Now, this is a challenging question. So we've actually posed this to the NCCSD group because employers, we were really, as we talked about it as our payout committee, we were a little confused. When do we have to report if it's an independent contractor? And essentially, the consensus was if the entity hiring the employer, hiring an independent contractor, is making reoccurring payments, lump sums to an independent contractor should be reported if the independent contractor is already under an income withholding order. And I think that's the key. So if they're not, since there is not an active income withholding order, the employer wouldn't be aware on where to report the lump sum to a child support agency. I mean, if you think about it, if there wasn't an active income withholding order, the employer would be potentially going and reporting every single payment to an independent contractor. And if they're not using OCSS's portal, they'd have to go to every state. And that would be a lot of work on the state's part and a lot of work on the employer's part. For people that are for contractors that you don't even know if there's an active order. So, you know, we kind of went full circle when we went down this deep dive, but the consensus was if there is an active income withholding order, you would report. And if there is not, then there is no requirement to report because you would not even know what agency to report to.
Well, that gets about as clear as mud at times.
You took the words out of my mouth, Tim.
So let's talk a little bit too about best practices. Are there any best practices that you're aware of or can tell our employer listeners?
So I think you've heard it. Check, double check, triple check. If you get an order in and you are unable to locate the person listed in your payroll system, go check your accounts payable system or whatever system it is that you house your independent contractor information. I will share with you, you know, I go to conferences and quite often we get the question, you know, well, I get the order and I get so many orders that I don't find the person in my payroll system. And I always say, make sure you're taking it to the next level and checking within the system that houses your independent contractors, because that income withholding order applies to the independent contractors. And inevitably, every single conference we share that with, employers will say, well, the order already applies to independent contractors, even if it's not a state that requires reporting of the independent contractor. Absolutely. That income withholding order already is applicable to any independent contractor that you're making payments to. And so if I could share a best practice, it's the education and awareness is key. I know a lot of states have employer conferences that they do either on an annual or quarterly basis. Make sure you're revisiting all, you know, this as a topic, because payroll professionals change, people get promoted, processes that you as an employer had in place, and you have changes in your personnel, it can go, and especially if it's not a more frequent process that you do all the time, it can kind of, you know, have opportunities in that process flow. So that constant awareness, and for state agencies constantly sharing that information, I think is key as a best practice. And then for employers, if you have an established process flow, right? If you know that the order already applies to independent contractors, then make sure that you have an established process flow and that you're checking it. I always say, you know, inspect your output. Go through a process flow on a quarterly basis to say, what would I do, and ask your team, what would I do if I received an income withholding order and it is someone that is an independent contractor? What are the steps that I need to go through? What are the checks and balances? And what is the ultimate expectation on the output, right? Make sure you're doing that on a frequent basis, so you have no surprises that come into play. And then finally, I always encourage employers, if you have questions, contact the issuing agency. The agencies, especially within the child support arena, want to help employers be successful. Robin mentioned the stat earlier in the podcast about how much employers contribute to making sure that child support is paid in the United States. So there is a great partnership. And I think that, you know, employers and state agencies and the Federal Office of Child Support, we all come together for the benefit of making sure that the child support program is a success. And so when you have questions as an employer, contact the issuing agencies, contact OCSS's employers team. Robin's team is always there to either provide assistance, to help you find a contact at the state agency if you're struggling with that. And then I would just say, ultimately as well, employers should be having a great relationship with their legal department. I always say, if you ultimately make sure that your legal department is on board and aware of what the processes that you've put into place, because you will want to make sure that they are in agreement. The employer is ultimately responsible for understanding what the requirements are and complying. And so having that partnership with your legal department is also key.
That's great information, Corey. Thank you. Robin, are there any last thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
So I echo everything that Corey just said. One of the things that, you know, at the Federal Office of Child Support Services, we actually have on our employer team, we have several mailboxes that are dedicated to different aspects for employers to reach out to. And, you know, the question comes in very frequently. I received an income withholding order. This person is a 1099 contractor. What should I do with it? And so, you know, our response is always, you need to honor it. So I think the education is the key. And, you know, for the child support agencies, you know, when they have opportunities to speak to employer groups, you know, PAYO chapter meetings or PAYO state conferences, you know, that needs to be forefront, because I think too often the employers, like Corey said, check the payroll and they're not on the payroll. So then the income withholding order may not be honored. And that's a very important piece to make sure for the awareness. As I mentioned earlier, on the NCCSD Employer Collaboration Committee, we have been focusing on independent contractors for a good bit of time now. And there is some discussion and some work going on from that perspective, in looking at from the child support agency perspective, potentially introducing a model act to make things a little more consistent, because one of the things we hear very frequently, you know, is the challenges that the employer community has because of the different states and the different requirements, you know, and not having one consistent document or one consistent, you know, regulation across, you know. The greatest thing for the employer community was the income withholding order, because it was standard for all states. And then the National Medical Support Notice, you know, standard across all states. So as we can get things a little more standard, it then helps them not to have to look to see, okay, what does this state require? You know, and is this one of the states that has a law? I had a really good question. I did a employer conference just last month, and they said, well, I am a multi-state reporter, and the state that we have chosen to report to does not have independent contractor requirements. However, we have employees in states that, you know, that state has the law. Well, you know, so that's a good question. That's a good education. That's a good something, because if they are reporting to a state that doesn't have the law, doesn't have the requirement, then they don't have to report it, even if the employee works in a state that has the law. So, you know, there's a lot to it, and a lot to be look toward the future to see how we can look at this particular topic and, you know, work with the employer community to try to work through some of the issues. And that's, you know, what we're doing. And again, I do echo Corey, because from our team perspective, we really, really value highly outreach and education. And to Corey's point, and to our partnership, employers want to do the right thing, but very often they just don't know, you know, what it is, especially related to independent contractors. Since the pandemic, you know, this issue has become way, way, way hotter with the Uber and Lyft and DoorDash, you know, all of the things that came really prevalent in the pandemic. You know, now we're seeing a whole lot more, and the ramifications on child support. So this is a great topic, and one that, you know, look forward to exploring more as the time goes on.
Well, thank you, Robin. Corey, any final thoughts?
So I said you were going to hear probably throughout this, education is key. That was the theme. And so I go back to that again. Employers really need to ensure that they're aware of how to process orders coming in for independent contractors. Listening to things like this podcast is key. Attending the conferences. I highly encourage employers to attend child support conferences that the states may be offering, or even attending virtual webinars. They need to really have a great legislative monitoring tool or process in place. We know Oregon was one of the recent states that passed some legislation regarding independent contract reporting that goes into effect in January of 2024. So an employer, it's not just a matter of, okay, I know the states that require the reporting and I'm done. They have to continually monitor changes within the child support landscape to ensure that they're in compliance. That's our roles as employers doing business. And so it's the awareness, it's the education. And for states, if I could leave any lasting thoughts, if they're looking to make some changes, or if they want some best practices from the employer's side of the house, if they could implement the maximum withholding limits and make that very clear for states and publish that information to employers, it could save, you know, the one employer that said 100% of the time they have to make calls. If they understood for independent contractors, I know it's always going to be, you know, 50% or whatever those maximum limitations are. And I don't know how challenging or difficult that is from a state's perspective, but I know that's what I have heard employers share, if that could be more standardized or very clear. OCSS has a great matrix that provides some information there, but we don't want to have to call when we get an order. We want to be able to just pick it up and process it. And along those same lines, for the states that have passed the new hire reporting of independent contractors, as Robin mentioned, I think our PAYO group was one that also encouraged, if there's a way on the income withholding order to indicate that that was issued as a result of an employer reporting that independent contractor, we would love to see that. It really makes it more efficient for when the payroll individual gets it to be able to process that order quickly. Robin mentioned that it would take some changes, and it's not just the indicator. We do understand that and appreciate that. But if we can start those dialogues early, right, it helps everyone understand and what needs to happen to make that, put that into place at some point. But I think it's going down that path and exploring it to make sure that we are processing correctly and as the states would like us to. And then, as Robin mentioned, the NCCSD working on that model language for independent contractors and partnering with employer organizations to bring that awareness. I would say I encourage that highly.
Well, thank you. This has been such an informative and really educational conversation. We want to thank our guests today, Corey Flores from ADP and Robin Large from the Federal Office of Child Support Services, for continuing to shed light and answer questions on the child support program and about responsibilities when receiving withholding orders for child support programs for independent contractors. I'm Pat O'Donnell.
And I'm Tim Leitner. We look forward to bringing you yet another installment in this series. Thanks for listening. This has been On Location.
Well, thanks again very much to Corey and to Robin for joining us as guests on the show today. And thanks also to Pat O'Donnell and Tim Leitner for leading the conversation. And special thanks to Tim Leitner, as always, for his work in the producing and editing of the episode. On Location is available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and check out our previous work as well. We also appreciate your ratings, feedback, comments, and suggestions. If you have an idea for a topic or would like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us using the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCIA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Tim Leitner and me. Thanks for joining me. I'm Joe Mamlin, and this has been On Location.